The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
Now, as Eamon mentioned in the news headlines a few moments ago, the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, announcing today a zero tolerance approach to abuse. Well, the Minister joins me now here on The Hard Shoulder. Minister, tell me a little bit more about this plan, please.
Good afternoon, Kieran. Could I start just by saying I think that today is a really important day. This is the most ambitious strategy that we have brought government, or that we as a government have agreed to tackle domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. And the overall goal, the overall aim of this strategy is that we have a zero tolerance to any kind of domestic, sexual or gender-based violence, and indeed the attitudes that underpin us. And I know people might ask, well, what does that mean? What are we talking about? What's different here? And to me, really, this is about changing attitudes. It's about changing hearts. It's about changing minds. It's about not accepting or tolerating any kind of abuse simply because it's behind closed doors or it's in a personal relationship or in a family setting. It's every single one of us, and in particular, I would say men. It's calling out the inappropriate comments, the discussions on the WhatsApp groups. It's the type of behaviours that happen when we're out in a night out. But it's also getting back to the real basics here. It's about introducing new types of education for young people and children. So what is a healthy relationship? What does it mean to be in a healthy relationship, either between a boy and a girl or a man and a woman, but also in a family setting? What constitutes abusive relationships? And as children and adults, the children become adults, how do we talk about healthy sexual relationships? So there's a huge amount in this strategy. You know, there's a huge focus on prevention, which is a really key element of this if we're going to actually change the attitudes and behaviours. And of course, there's a key focus on making sure that those who do commit these crimes, that there's very clear punishments, that there's very clear laws, and that obviously our Gardaí and others are there to support victims in the best way that they can.
The implication from all of that is that it's your view, and I'm sure the view of others, that we do tolerate these type of things at the moment, is it? And that because they're happening behind closed doors, we do turn a blind eye to them.
I think in some ways society is changing. I think COVID has really shone a light on the fact that this happens far more often than people would like to think. And it happens everywhere. And it's not just in older relationships. It happens in younger relationships as well. But I think also, you know, with the use of social media, the way younger people are engaging with each other, I think there are behaviours that have changed that didn't exist before now. And maybe, for example, I would say the access to pornography that young people have, the impact that that then has on what they constitute as a healthy sexual relationship. Sexual relationships should not be violent. They should not be degrading. They should not be abusive. But this is something that has emerged more in recent years. And yes, I do think that for too long we have said, well, this is behind closed doors. It doesn't really involve us. We shouldn't really get involved. Whereas you know and I know, if you were walking down the street and you saw a violent attack happening or abuse, you would pick up the phone and ring the guards. And in some instances, people would try and intervene. So it's about changing that perception that just because it happens online, just because it happens behind closed doors, that it has nothing to do with us. So there's a huge amount of policies, of laws, of structures here to make sure that government does its job, that our agencies do their job, that our NGOs who are vital to this, that they're supported. But there will be an onus on each and every one of us to play our part and to try and make sure that we change our attitudes and our thoughts and how we think about domestic and sexual violence.
Is part of that picture then of changing attitudes and thoughts visiting something like character references often offered in court? Justice David Keane a few days ago talking about the need for people who offer them to be there in court for cross-examination and suggesting the areas in need of reform. We all remember Mickey Hart, the former Tyrone manager, a few years ago offering a character reference for a sex attacker. Is that something you'd like to look at?
This is an element that's already in the plan, and every action in this plan has been agreed by my department and every other department involved. We had a private members bill brought forward by government colleagues only in the last year, which specifically looks at character references where you have sentencing, where you've had a guilty plea or where you've had a trial that has concluded. So we're looking to, I suppose, develop that private members bill, but take into account all of what you have just mentioned there. So there's a bit more work to be done on it. But, you know, I would be moving in that space, certainly.
Yeah, so, but what I mean, what's your view that people, you would like ultimately that people who offer those references are available for cross-examination, or that those references are maybe limited to immediate family members, or what?
So we still have work to do, but personally, and I'm giving you my personal view on this, I do think that if someone is willing to give a character reference for someone where there has been a sentence or where there has been a decision handed down by the court, then you should be willing to back that up and to come before a court and to give that reference. But the detail of this has to be worked through. There is a commitment to make sure that we progress this particular piece of legislation. And obviously that will involve further engagement from a legal side of things, but also engaging with victims, engaging with those services who are at the front line of all of this.
Another part of the picture then, and as you said right at the outset, it's a comprehensive plan, but another part of it is sentencing changes around domestic abuse. Tell me about that.
Well, what I've looked at here is probably the most common type of charge that is brought where you have a domestic violence assault or where you have an incident. There's about 500 a year that are charged under this assault causing harm. Not all of those are domestic violence cases, obviously, but a significant number of them are. The maximum penalty at the moment is 5 years. And having looked through some of the cases, and these would have been presented by a number of judges, you have one, for example, where a young woman who was 4 months pregnant, her partner boiled sugar and water and poured it over her, causing massive, massive physical but also psychological harm. But because a maximum sentence was imposed after mitigating factors, after taking guilty pleas, after all of these things, the sentence was reduced significantly. We had another such case where a woman was stabbed 4 times by her partner, one of which perforated her lung. But because she had recovered, because of guilty pleas, because of mitigating factors, that was reduced to 2.5 years. Now, this is not to dictate what a sentence should be, but by increasing that sentence, you are giving a judge, you are giving the court greater flexibility to say this is a serious crime, this caused serious harm, and still taking into account the mitigating factors I've said, whether it's a guilty plea, whether it's time served, but that we are saying these are serious offences. If you are convicted of theft or of damaging property, you can face up to 10 years. So to me, we're talking about a person, an individual, a life that should equate, and it should be the same, if not more.
Why not go further and introduce a mandatory minimum sentence? I know there's the separation of powers arguments, but we do have them in other aspects of the law.
We have them in very, very limited circumstances, and even those have been challenged. So this is, I suppose, a very difficult space to move into. We do have to appreciate, and I fully respect the separation of powers that are there. So anything that I am proposing in relation to sentencing, it is about creating and providing greater flexibility for the judiciary and for the legal profession to be able to go to that higher scale if that is what they so wish.
But to give that example again, of that awful example you gave, I mean, were that to happen in the future, the exact same sentence could be handed down. You're just hoping that the judge will kind of get the message that the sentence should be a little harsher because they can go further.
So a lot of this is actually coming from the judiciary. So these are reports that have come from the judiciary through the DPP suggesting that they had no other option but to go with the maximum and then reduce it. So what we are doing here is providing an opportunity. You have to remember there are other options as well. So you have life sentences which aren't just handed down for murder or where there is death. They can be handed down for rape or serious assault cases as well. In that instance, you have a minimum of 12 years before someone can come before the parole board. What I have already proposed and what I've provided for previously that we're going to develop in legislation is that a judge would have the flexibility to perhaps even set that sentence even higher. So this is all about making sure that there is that flexibility there. I would bring it back though, and obviously sentencing is hugely important, and to those cases and those women I've just mentioned, it is so important that they know that if somebody causes them this type of harm, that there is a sentence at the end of it that matches that horrendous crime. But there's a lot of focus here on making sure that we have education at the earlier stage, that we have really well-developed perpetrator programs, that we have various different programs working with our probation service, that we try and get to some of the root cause of this as well. So there are quite a number of actions in this to actually try and deal with the offending behaviours, as well as sending a very clear message to the victims that this simply can't be accepted anymore, and this is going to be treated in the serious nature that it is.
You mentioned COVID a few minutes ago in the context of domestic violence. I think a lot of people maybe caught by surprise when they got push notifications on their phones a little bit earlier today. The government considering legislation or drafting legislation rather to enforce mask wearing again. What can you tell us about that?
Really, what was discussed here was just the very early stages of even contemplating this. So this is not to draft legislation and to come back and approve it. This is to kind of look at what potentially could be required if things were to get worse. And I think if we've learned anything over the last 2 years is that, you know, fail to prepare, prepare to fail, to use that old saying. But it's about making sure that if things were to significantly decrease, that we have some options available to us to make sure that we try and mitigate. I mean, the numbers in hospitals are not what they would have been, but they're obviously increasing. And, and we can all see it in our workplace. There's a lot more people now that have COVID than there would have been in the past. So this is really, it's about being precautionary. It's about putting measures in place should they be needed. But we're nowhere near this actually being implemented or being put into law.
Is this a winter thing that this is being considered in the context of, or possibly sooner?
We know that obviously for people are indoors, that this is more likely to spread. Obviously, we're in the summer months now. We're hoping that the hump that we're finding ourselves in, that we're going to get over it soon. But you do anticipate, as is the case with every year, that you will have a flu season. That then, coupled with the potential for increased cases in COVID, it really is about preparing ourselves and just making sure that we have options available to us should we need them. It's not the direction I want to go in. It's not the direction anybody wants to go in again. But I think, as I said at the outset, I think we just need to be prepared here.
Can I just ask then, before I let you go, about your own bailiwick, and I mean that in the geographical sense, about Navan, the hospital in Navan, which was due to be downgraded. That's all a little bit up in the air at the moment. The HSE say it absolutely needs to be downgraded, that it's unsafe. That's also the message from the clinical director, Gerry McEntee, and your own uncle. I mean, what's your view?
Firstly, can I just say I will always, always listen to the clinical experts and the medical experts in this space, and I have always done so, and I don't dispute what is being said to me, in particular around Navan Hospital. What I also have to do, and I suppose this is always a politician's job, is to listen to every voice that is being that is part of this discussion. And what we are hearing very clearly back is from clinicians and medical experts in Drogheda Hospital, which would obviously be impacted by any change. So what I've asked is, I suppose, questions around capacity, how this would work. And I think it's really important that, that we all, I suppose, have clarity around those answers.
Okay.
Maybe just to acknowledge, I know obviously yesterday we heard that Paul Reid is resigning or retiring from the HSE. And I just personally want to acknowledge his huge contribution. I've worked with him not just across justice while dealing with COVID, but also in my former role as Minister for Mental Health, where he was hugely involved in the youth mental health strategy. So I just want to acknowledge his huge work and contribution in his time at HSE.
So just to get this clear, I mean, you're in agreement with Gerry McEntee when he says the hospital is unsafe to a proportion of patients who are critically ill, and that's the view of nurses, physicians, surgeons, anaesthetists and junior doctors. They all are in agreement with this. And if you're satisfied the capacity exists in Drogheda, you'll support the downgrading of Navan.
So what I'm saying is I fully accept what is being said about the risk that exists for that cohort of patients. I also fully accept that there is a transfer of risk that is being discussed and that is a very serious concern for those who are managing Drogheda Hospital.
But if you're satisfied or if you get the answers you're looking for in terms of the capacity to deal with increased patients in Drogheda, you'll support the downgrading of Navan.
So I will always support what is clinical direction, and I was
And that's the downgrading of Navan. I understand you don't want to say the words, but that's what it is.
Well, no, what I'm saying here is there are two clinical views in this regard. So we need to make sure that everybody is on the same page before any decision is taken, be it to keep services or to change them. But at the moment, there are two very, very different clinical views as to what should happen for Navan. So it's very hard for me to say what I would or wouldn't accept when there are two very different clinical views that I am being told about. So I think that's what needs to be resolved here, and that's simply what I have been asking for in terms of that clarity.
Minister for Justice Helen McEntee. Minister, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Stay with us here on The Hard Shoulder. We've just mentioned COVID as well. Ramifications being felt in SW19. We'll reveal all after this very quick break.
The Hard Shoulder with